Hey guys, it's Maya. It's been a while, but it is currently March 2020. The coronavirus is raging, and I'm self-quarantined for the foreseeable future. So I figured, why not interview a couple friends? Today I talked to Felicia Cook, who has been a USY staff member of mine for the past few years. I was really excited to talk to Felicia because she is an adult and a true millennial, but is able to connect with teenagers incredibly well. She's also passionate about sibling dynamics, so we obviously get along. Keep listening to hear us chat about growing up with the internet, what it means to treat someone like a teenager, as well as which shape of pasta, M&M, and French fry is superior. Felicia, tell me something that your parents did wrong.
So my parents, I felt like, were a little strict when I was growing up. I always felt like we always had the earliest curfews and the strictest car rules. And one thing I really remember specifically was when I was in high school and having to sometimes not tell my parents everything I was doing, even though I was a really good kid. So I think that they were just sometimes a little too strict with me when I was younger.
Do you have any specific times that like this happened, a specific story you want to tell us?
So one thing that really comes to mind is when I was in high school, I remember a group of friends were having a bonfire, which is a pretty innocent activity. And I knew for a fact my parents would never have let me go to that. So I had to tell them that I was at a friend's house. And had to say, like, you know, we're in for the night. And I had purposely slept over that friend's house. I knew her parents would have no problem letting us go out to a bonfire at night, and that my parents would have never let us. And instead of being able to tell my parents something really innocent and honest, I had to just not even tell them and kind of omit the truth with fear of them telling me I couldn't do it. So that's something that I always think about.
I feel like something that every teenager knows is like, or at least like when I think about my friends and the people I go to school with, is that like when you are super strict to an extent, like you encourage a certain level of sneakiness. I think I see that. My parents aren't really like that, but like I still feel like when I look at, I think that when I, if I think they would say no, then yeah, like I probably am a bit more sneaky. I just wonder, like, why do you think parents do that?
You know, it's so funny you say that because it's so easy for me also to say, like, I won't be this way when I'm a parent. And I don't know either, because I was a really good kid, and my siblings and I always remind our parents, like, you got so lucky with the three of us. We are good kids. Like, we really never gotten into big trouble. We, you know, we went to school. Like, our after school activities were very calm and chill. Like, we did USY and my brother did BYO. And sometimes I wonder and I think back about, like, why were they so strict with some of my activities that were so innocent? And I think it really all came down to, like, I was the oldest, or I am the oldest, and that I think they were really nervous to have a teenager. And I don't think it really mattered because I was a good kid, obviously. So I don't know, and I think that's something I try to think about, like, when I have kids one day, is that I don't want my kids to have to lie to me, but I also want to make sure that they're doing the right things. So I think it's that fine line that parents try to figure out, and it's hard to find that line, and it's easy to look back and say, oh, maybe we didn't have to be this hard on them, or like, oh, maybe we could have been a little more strict or a little less strict, but I think it's hard to be a parent. Like, I don't know what that's like yet, so.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Definitely. So a couple of days ago, I was talking to you when we were talking about what we were going to talk about in this interview. I asked you what issues you thought teens were facing today, and you brought up something that I like completely had not thought about, which is that there are huge differences between like my parents and your parents, like Gen X, like 60s, 70s, and then like your generation. But the difference between millennials and then, like, Gen Z, my generation, isn't as extreme as I think I always perceived it to be. And I think where this came up a lot was when we were talking about social media. So do you want to talk a little bit about, like, what role the internet played in your life when you were a teenager?
Yeah, so it's funny, you're right, because there are some huge differences. Like, one of the things I remember I was telling you was a big point of contention in my family was that my parents wouldn't get my siblings and I, like, unlimited texting. And you were like, that's such, like, a weird concept. It's yeah. like, not relatable at all anymore. Like, everyone has smartphones. You don't pay for text like you did in the early to mid-2000s, like, when I got my first cell phone. But I do think, you know, I think it was very similar, but also very different. Like, people are always like, oh, this group of Gen X kids, like, their whole world is based on the internet. Their whole world is based on, like, we didn't have Instagram. We didn't have this. It's like, no, we didn't have Instagram, but we did have AIM, like, AOL Instant Messenger. We had MySpace. And then we had Facebook, like, by my freshman year of high school is when Facebook became such a big thing. And it was still the same thing. Like, we like to pretend that it wasn't, but it was. If it wasn't so different, then it wouldn't have been such a big deal that my family and I weren't, like, my siblings and I weren't allowed to have unlimited texting. Like, maybe it was a little less because we didn't have cell phones that had, like, the apps on them, but I had a computer in my room as soon as I turned 13, and I remember being in middle school going on AIM Instant Messenger, going on Facebook, going on MySpace, and, like, having the same kinds of issues that teens are facing now. Like, I remember in MySpace, it was, like, in middle school, like, there was a certain aesthetic, and it was this, like, equivalent of, like, a 2020 e-girl, and, or, like, e-boy, like, it was, like, the emo stage.
Yeah.
And, like, I wasn't really emo, obviously. I was, like, a white Jewish girl living in
wow, emo Felicia.
But, like, It was like this aesthetic we had to have, and, like, if you didn't have that, you didn't, like, fit in necessarily. I don't think it's changed a lot. I think there's a bigger difference between, like, my parents who are boomers and, like, your parents who are Gen X. I feel like that's where the bigger difference is, and then, like, the boomers to millennials is where, like, the larger differences rise and where the bigger points of contention are.
That's so interesting. I didn't think about it that way because, like, my parents didn't grow up with technology as, like, a deep part of their lives, but, like, they had computers in their houses and they had internet as teenagers, and, like, they couldn't do much with it, but they had it. Where, like, for my bubby, like, that was a huge change in her life when, like, my dad was, he was probably, like, 10 years old when they got a computer. I don't really know when they were created, but but, like, it wasn't a huge shift in, like, the way that my parents' world existed the way it was for, like, yeah, for, like, my grandparents, for boomers. That's, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, like, my parents were both born in the 50s, and, like, things were a lot different then, but then there's even this, like, change within the next group. Like, my parents are a decent amount older than Jason's parents. Jason is my husband, for people listening who are not, who don't know me. Like, my parents are, like, quite a few years older than Jason's parents, and there's still, like, you can see this big difference, like, my dad, like, didn't know how to print, like, pull up a boarding pass when both our parents came to visit on his cell phone. And Jason's dad, who is, like, 9 years younger than my dad, was, like, trying to teach him. And it's just, like, it's so interesting how I think some of the bigger gaps fall there. Like, I think millennials kind of feel for the Gen Zers. Like, I feel like we kind of have your back because we know that the millennials kind of have this bad rap with the other generations. So we're like, yeah, like, we got you, we understand.
That's great to hear. I feel like millennials are the age group that I interact with the least because, like, where would I see them, you know?
Right. Except for, like, with me, who you know from, like, this very niche part of your life. But there's probably, like, so many more teens that, like, they don't know a millennial. Like, why would they? They're not their peers, they're not their parents, they're not their grandparents. It's like, who are we to them?
Right, totally. So. When I was in middle school, I think, and elementary school too, but when I was in, like, sixth grade, a big thing that we talked about for good reason was cyberbullying. And I know, like, did you ever see that movie about cyberbullying starring Emily Osment? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I can't, like, remember if I've seen it, but It sounds really familiar.
Well, the specific plot isn't important. I don't really remember, just that, like, it exists and it stars Emily Osment. And like, that movie was, like, a big thing that we watched and we talked about. This idea of, like, getting mean messages, and that obviously happens and is an issue that needs to be talked about. But something that I don't think adults in my life were prepared to help me with when I was spending more and more time on social media was that I think a lot more than people experience kind of like direct hate on social media, because it's been drilled into our heads so much that, you know, everything you say is there forever. I think people feel a lot more pressure from like the influencers we follow. That's a lot more subconscious. Uh-huh. Do you think was the internet like that when you were younger, or like how have you dealt with that?
I think it was similar but different, because at first when you influencers, I was like, I don't remember influencers really being a thing when I was in middle and high school. I feel like when I was in middle school when I dealt with a lot more of this kind of stuff, because like I think MySpace was a breeding ground for a lot of like cyberbullying and kind of that influencer lifestyle, because it was set up very differently. I don't really remember a ton about MySpace, but I do remember like there was a few accounts that had so many friends and so many likes, and one of my friends and I followed a bunch of them and we thought it was really cool, and I guess that was like the influencers of I guess probably like 2003 and 2004 and 2005, and AIM Instant Messenger was like the today's version of like a DM. Like if you got an IM, like people could be really mean on it, and like you could add strangers on it through chat rooms. Like, so I think so in middle school I think is when a lot of that was a problem. I remember getting messages in middle school because I was in like the gifted program, and they'd be like, you're a nerd, and like, why are you in this, like, blah, blah.
Really?
I remember in middle school getting messages, my friends, too, from, like, other girls, like, being really rude, being, like, really mean, and I remember being nervous to go to school and stuff, and I eventually told my parents, and I think that was really the first time that cyberbullying was probably an issue, but I don't think... I feel like in Facebook, at least for me, this doesn't mean for other kids, but for me, it wasn't an issue. But that could also be like a high school versus middle school thing, or like, I think people like to forget that like it's not new. It started like in the early 2000s, I would say. But I'm sure before that, like there's always been some version of it. Like I'm sure kids used to pass really mean notes to each other in like the 90s.
Right, yeah. No, definitely. I think that people have always found ways to be mean to their peers.
Right.
But, like, this is a much more permanent one. I mean, I always remember, like, it was always talked about as, like, a college thing. Of, like, you're going to get into, like, a great college, and then they're going to find these messages you sent when you were younger, and you're not going to get in. Which is a thing that is fair when it happens. Just, like, mm-hmm. kind of odd messaging.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I remember, I feel like the most of, like, what I can what I can compare is probably, like, middle school for me. But I think it's, like, I mean, it's definitely magnified now, and there's so many more opportunities. Like, with TikTok, which I started following as a joke.
Oh, I love TikTok. I thought it was a joke, too. I'm so into it.
I mean, I think it's hilarious and super entertaining. Sometimes I feel really weird that I'm 29 looking at TikToks, but, like, people are horrible to each other in the comments.
Yeah.
So mean. Like, they don't care that their name is publicized. They don't care that thousands of people can see it. Like, people are mean, and it becomes, like, a trend to make fun of other people. Like, it's bad. Like, I don't think anything can compare to that I can remember.
Right before I called you, I was going through all of my photos, just looking at, like, you know, all the things I could do when I could leave my house and all the friends I could see when I was allowed to be with people. And I put together this Instagram post of, like, just, like, a bunch of pretty pictures I took and friends I miss and other things. And I was about to post it, and I was like, will people comment on this? Like, will I get the same amount of likes I normally do? Like, it's kind of random. Do I tag everyone? There are people who I don't talk to often in here. And I realized in that moment, I was like, wow, I care about, like, curating a look at my feed more than I thought I did. Do you think that, I mean, you're an adult, like, so you don't, I guess you don't have a lot of, like, the pressure of, like, I don't know, high school when it comes, or, like, what I think about is, like, I'm about to start college, like, new friends looking at my feed, and that's their first impression of me, so you don't really have that pressure, but do you worry about, like, curating your social media feeds, or did you when you were younger?
I don't really care now. Sometimes I do, like, notice things I post that get more likes and get less likes, and it's funny because it's a lot different when you're older. Like, when I was posting, like, wedding photos and stuff, like, I was getting 300 likes, like, ridiculous amounts of likes. And then, like, I posted, I don't post a lot on Instagram. I recently, since I've been home and very bored, been posting a lot on my Instagram story, but that's also kind of new. But I did notice that, like, I posted over Thanksgiving when I went to Disney, I posted a picture and I think it got like 70 likes, which is still like a lot, but like compared to my wedding photos that were getting so many. And then I posted another wedding photo because it was like our 6 months married in like December, and I think it got 100 something, and I was like, okay, like, I know the kind of content that I can curate to like get a certain amount of likes. And I do remember caring about it more like right after college. I think when likes really started becoming a thing, like, I feel like millennials do not get as many likes on things as Gen X, because Gen Z, because I just think it's in, I think it's a little bit of a different culture thing. I remember like really wanting Facebook pictures to get a lot of likes. That was like a big thing.
I have no idea how to use Facebook, and I don't want to try. It's hard. It's confusing. I can't do it.
That's how I felt when Facebook became a thing instead of MySpace when I was in 9th grade, and I was like, I don't even want this. And then I was like, and then Facebook was like literally it for like 5 years, and now it's, I don't even know what like is, because sometimes I think it's Instagram, sometimes I think it's Snapchat, but like you were like, I don't even use Snapchat.
Yeah, I don't use Snapchat. It was too much work for me. But sometimes I realize how much I mean, I don't miss out on, like, real things, but, like, my friends will be talking about someone's story, and, like, I'll have no idea what the drama is, and I don't care because I don't see it. So maybe Snapchat is the big thing. I'm just not on it.
Yeah, I don't really know. I use Snapchat, I use Instagram. I still would say I use Facebook. I definitely don't, like, post TikToks, but I like to scroll on the For You page. I have friends, though, and I don't know if this is like a really big blanket statement. I think because I'm married, I care about getting likes. I know that sounds really stupid, but like, I don't really care who likes my stuff now, you know? Like,
yeah, that it makes sense. I'm married.
It's like, whatever. Like, I have a different like life thing going on now, but like, I do feel that like, I have started to notice like in the last year or two that I really am getting older. And I know 29 is not old, but like, I texted a US Wire today and I was like, what is this Instagram trend? The like, till tomorrow thing.
Oh my God.
I was like, what is this? And she was like, it's this dumb trend. Like, I don't even know. Cause I don't know. So like, sometimes I'm just like, maybe I am old.
Yesterday in a Zoom meeting, the icebreaker question was, what's your most and least favorite quarantine Instagram trend? And I think everyone said until tomorrow was their least favorite.
I just don't get it. I liked when that thing was going around where it was like, draw a potato.
Yeah, that was the only one I liked, was draw a fruit or vegetable. Everything else has been bad. What do you want teenagers to know as someone who grew up with the internet not that differently from how we did?
So I know this sounds like really cliche, but I think the biggest thing is that the things that are happening now aren't going to matter long term. I know that sounds really just like, oh yeah, we hear that all the time, but it matters right now. But like, I remember I was telling two of my teens this. They had gone into a fight and they were like, our friendship's over. And I was like, do you guys want to hear a story? When I was in 8th grade, my best friend straight up catfished me. I'm not kidding.
You told me the story and I could not believe it.
Yep, my best friend made fake Facebook for a boy who was allegedly moving to our high school, and like, I don't remember what it took, but eventually I figured it out, and I was really upset. Like, I was more upset that my friends were like doing this, and it wasn't just to me, it was like a lot of people, than that this boy wasn't real. But they were like, you're not friends with her anymore, right? And I was like, no, she was in my wedding. Like, yeah, she's still my friend. Like, these things, like, was that a big, like, point of contention in our friendship in eighth grade? But, like, the things that happened then, now looking back on them, are just, like, so ridiculous. But I think the other big thing to remember is that, like, teens and millennials, but, like, teens more, because I feel like Gen Z gets, like, a bad rap about this, are not bad people for being invested in the internet. It doesn't make you less connected with society. It doesn't make you less of a good person because you're invested in the internet and because you like how things look on social media. Like, should you let it control your whole life? No, but I think as long as you're being yourself and you're having fun and you're enjoying yourself and you have a concept of what's real and what's not, then I think it's perfectly fine and healthy and safe to, like, enjoy social media. I enjoy social media. Like, my mom, who's 61 years old, will watch YouTube videos for hours because she, like, thinks that she can learn Spanish from the internet. And, like, I don't think it matters how you're doing it. I think the internet is just a part of our world now, and that the older generation is just, like, giving Gen Z and millennials a bad rep for that, and I don't think that's fair. I think it's okay.
The past couple weeks of quarantine, I think, have been a good reminder for older people of that, because for me and my friends, like, the switch to doing school online and most other things online, it's a change and it's not ideal, and I miss being with my friends in person, but the actual technological part of it hasn't been hard. But I think that I think that beyond, like, my grandparents who are still learning how a lot of this stuff works, I think there's been a lot of resistance to switching to doing most things online, and, like, that's the only option we have right now if we want to stay safe.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, it's not, I don't want to be like, it's not like an I regret you a wrong moment, because it's not ideal and I miss seeing my friends, but it's clear that being adaptable is helpful.
Yes. I mean, there's so many things that are changing now because we've been put in this position, and then, like, what does this mean for the future? Like, I think down the road, while this has been absolutely terrible and, like, obviously nobody has wanted this to happen and no one's saying that, but I think some things will come out of it that we would have never expected before, like, what the internet is capable of and, like, what we're capable of. And I saw this, like, thing that was funny, but it's so true. It's like, it was like, so many people are going to realize that so many meetings could have just been emailed
yeah.
because of quarantine. And it's so true.
Yeah. Oh my God. Definitely. Do you have any advice to other adults on how to be good at talking to teenagers?
So I wish I, so first off, it took me a long time to admit that I was good at talking to teenagers, just because, like, I'm just one of those people who hates to admit I'm good at anything. And Jason's always like, Felicia, you're, like, literally so good at this job. So, like,
you're very good at it. You're very good at talking to teenagers.
Well, thank you. But I wish I had, like, a magic formula that I could, like, share with people to, like, help them. But I think it's just, I think it has to come from a good place and a place where you treat teens like teens. Like, they're not kids, they're not adults, and I think you can talk to them like adults when they need to be, and I think you can treat them like kids when it needs to be, but I think you also need to treat teens like teens, talk to them like they're your people, but you have to, you know, set that line of, like, but I am older than you, but I don't want to remind you of that all the time, because that's obnoxious. And kind of just, like, letting teens do their thing without making them feel judged. I think that's a really big problem that teens have always had. But I think especially this group, this generation, feels probably the most pressure of, like, judgment than I think any other group has. And I think that's a million factors. But, like, just not judging them and just caring about them and showing them you care and remembering what they talked to you about, and, like, remembering little things that they told you they liked 2 years ago, and just, like, keeping that in the back of your memory and reminding them that you care about them and that you're there for them. Like, that's what teens need, is someone who's there for them, who is not going to judge them.
Yeah, and to come back to the generational differences, I think it is useful, especially to see millennial adults who you can look up to, because, like, I am living in a very different world from my parents, and the world that you grew up in is just less different, and it's good to know that it works out, and I will grow up, and I will be an adult. It's really helpful to see that, and I think that, like, what... If I one correction that I think some adults could use is that I feel like I'm often talked to as an adult by my parents, which I really appreciate. But then I think that what can happen sometimes is that adults can forget that teenagers have the life experience of people who are slightly older than children and just don't know as much, you know? Like, right. maybe I can talk about certain things like an adult, but, like, I have no idea how most of the world works, like, and I don't understand a lot of things because I've had a lot less experience, and I think that sometimes teenagers who are good at sounding like adults, or sounding like experts, can feel like they get, like, that part of them that doesn't have a lot of life experience gets forgotten.
Right, and so, like, things are just kind of skimmed over, and you're just like, wait, well, you never taught me that. Like, you were supposed to teach me that. You're my parents. I didn't come out as an adult. So, yeah, that totally makes sense. And that's also, like, I think that's good to hear as someone who's older, who will, obviously, before you have kids and, like, raise kids who become teenagers. And I think that is so important to remember. 'Cause it's funny, I think I was not treated enough as an adult as a kid. Like, I think I was treated as a kid. Sometimes I think I'm still treated very much as a kid. And I think that's a big thing about, like, how I feel my parents stress me out now as an adult, is that I'm still their kid, but I'm an adult who, like, has my own life and does my own thing. So it's like, when I'm around my parents, we're back in this role where they're the adults and I'm the kid. But now it's just extremely frustrating because I'm an adult as well. So I think, like, for me, I was always treated as a kid, and I still am, where I think Jason is more like you, where he's been treated like an adult his whole life. I think Jason is very similar to you, where he has acted like an adult his whole life as well, which is funny because he's an oldest and I'm an oldest, but it's just different, and we're different.
Yeah.
And you're an oldest.
I am. We're all oldests.
Yeah.
That's why we all get along. We understand each other.
Exactly. That's why we all like each other so much. But I think that because Jason's treated as an adult literally since he was a kid, that I think sometimes even still his parents forget that he is a child and not a child. He is their child and not like their third like adult in this like family dynamic. I noticed that a lot with him, and he notices a lot with my family, and it really frustrates each other and the other person. I'll be like, oh my God, like, you know.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, you started to get into this. One of my great passions in life is talking about sibling dynamics, and you told me it's one of yours too. So
a perfect segue. Yeah. And Jason. Kindred spirits, the three of us.
So tell us about your sibling dynamics, and you think you're not a typical oldest, so tell us about that.
Right. I love talking about family roles, and I don't think I'm a typical oldest, which I only really realized when I started like talking about family roles when I got my certificate at HUC, and a lot of what we were learning about was family roles because we were going to be working with different kids in different families and like how to work with those kinds of people. And the reason that I don't think I'm a typical oldest is because my sister is 18 months younger than me, and as the professor, the rabbi who was teaching the class, like, pointed out, a lot of times siblings who are born less than 2 years apart are sometimes treated more as twins than in an oldest and youngest situation. Even though my sister is younger than me, we were in elementary school and middle school and high school, like, pretty much all at the same time. We were 1 grade apart, so we had a lot of the same friends. It was always kind of like a me and and then Brandon, like, Felicia and Samantha, you can help Brandon learn how to ride his bike, and Felicia and Samantha can help Brandon learn how to tie his shoe, and, like, we were both babies together, you know, like, I was 18 months when she was born, we were both in diapers, we were both, like, yes, I was walking and she was crawling, but we were both babies at the same time. And then when my brother came around, who's a little more than 4 years younger than me, we were both already kind of kids. Like, I was a little over four. She was not quite three yet, but because she was always around me, you know, she acted a little bit older. So it feels like we were treated more like twins. So I think we share a little bit of that oldest family role dynamic. Like, my sister is definitely the bossier one. Anyone in my family will say Samantha's the bossy one. Samantha, like, was always that person, and I've never really been bossy.
Which is, like, a classic oldest child trait, is, like, somehow right. This idea of, like, being in charge is expressed.
Right.
I'm very also bossy.
But it's also different with Jason. So with Jason's situation, he's 6 years older than his sister. So I feel like he's not a typical oldest either, because they almost grew up separately as only children, even though they're siblings.
And did you and your sister become, you guys went to different colleges, right?
Yes.
So you were kind of becoming adults separately. Do you think that was, like, useful? And do you feel like, when did you feel like a real adult? Do you?
I think I feel like a real adult now, because I'm married and because I have my own apartment that I have to pay for myself, and because I'm completely financially independent now. Well, like, me and Jason as a unit are financially independent of our parents, like, yeah, with each other. But, like, I feel like as soon as Jason and I moved in together and started, like, having a life together in that way, I think is when I really started to feel like an adult. So I guess at, like, 26. It was also, we were in a different state than both of our parents for the first time. Like, we were both living in Florida together in separate apartments, but, like, my parents were always going to be there. My sister was there. My brother was there. And, like, and then after, when he went to the year in Israel and I was a Repair the World Fellow in Pittsburgh, like, yes, we were in different places, but it almost felt like, in a way, that we were, like, still coddled by, like, the systems we were in. And I think for, like, now, for the first time, like, since moving into this apartment in Cincinnati, I'm like, oh, like, I'm a real adult. Like, I'm married. I'm 29. Like, I have a husband. Like, I filed my taxes jointly for the first time this year. Like, that was real grown up.
Yeah.
Like, I filed my own taxes for the first time last year, and I think that was a big marking. Like, my parents were like, okay, you're married. Like, you don't need – we're not bringing your taxes to our accountant anymore. Like, you're 29. So I was like, okay, I guess I am – I'm really starting to feel like an adult this year. I feel like we have become adults separately, but, like, my sister is the first one to say that we're still very codependent. Like, we definitely talk on the phone every single day, and we talk every day. And, like, my sister always jokes that, like, she's just going to move wherever Jason gets his next job. But, like, she lives with her boyfriend now, and, like, they've been together for a long time. So I feel like it's a little different, because, like, we both have this other person now that we have to take into consideration all the time. But over winter break, my sister stayed with us for a week, and she was joking that we were going to start a commune, and the four of us were just going to live together and have children all in the same house. And,
perfect.
Like, we were joking that it'd be perfect, and that, like, Jason and then her boyfriend Justin would just be like, oh my god, like, get me out of here. Like, it's when we're together, it's like, we're very much the same person, yeah.
Last night on your Instagram story, you mentioned something that really got me going, which was that you like long pasta shapes such as spaghetti better than short pasta shapes such as penne. Can you just like briefly defend yourself? Because I don't understand.
Do you know how much hate I've gotten for this? So my friends and I had a PowerPoint competition last night. It was actually so much fun. And we basically all made PowerPoints and presented them over Zoom on, like, funny topics. Like, it started out as, like, unpopular opinions, but then became, like, something we're really passionate about. So mine was that long pasta is better than thick pasta. And so, like round noodles and stuff. And so many people have messaged me about it, disagreeing. And I really didn't realize this was such a problem. I don't really have a good explanation. I just like how skinny pasta tastes better, and the only person who agrees with me is my brother. He literally is the only person who agreed with me. No one else agrees.
I just, I like don't understand it on like a physical level. Like, cold, like the idea of like really any spaghetti, but like especially like cold or room temperature spaghetti, just like I, here's the thing is when I imagine myself eating long pasta, I imagine it like filling my like windpipe and lungs and like getting stuck and my entire body just like filling up with like long pasta and like choking, and I just can't stand it. But different strokes for different folks.
Exactly. But okay, let me find out two important points. One, I will not like fully discriminate. Like I will choose long pasta over like thick pasta any day, but like if I'm getting pasta, like I'll eat pasta. Like
okay.
I'm not gonna turn pasta away. But my other point is that I think it's just like a texture mouthfeel thing, because I've just been talking to one of my friends about this, because literally a lot of people have been asking me about this pasta thing. I feel the same way about French fries. I don't like steak fries. I don't love waffle fries. But like I love like a skinny, like a shoestring fry, like basically like McDonald's fries.
Right, like McDonald's fries. Yeah.
And like I think it's a texture thing. I think thinner foods, I guess, taste better to me. I don't know why.
I agree with you on the fries point, because I think you get a higher level of like the surface crunch. Like ratio is different. You get like more crisp, which is also why like I would never just like eat M&Ms, like normal M&Ms, but like mini M&Ms, like yeah, I'll eat those, because you just get like a good amount of like crunch and like the crispiness.
I like mini M&Ms better as well.
So much
better. I like regular M&Ms also. Mini M&Ms are hard to come by, I feel like, so I don't have them as much, because if I bought them, I would just eat them by the handful in my apartment. But like, I agree that they are better.
Right. 100%. Okay, well, I'm glad we can agree on that. Is there something that you believed when you were a teenager that you now think is wrong? Or, like, if you could give a piece of advice to your teenage self or even, like, your parents, what would it be?
So, while I do think, like, some of the things my parents kind of did rule-wise were, like, a bit arbitrary as far as, like, some of the curfews being a little intense and, like, oh, you're not allowed to drive on the highway. You're not allowed to drive, like, with your friends more than, like, a few hours. Like, I remember that being a big issue, but I do think some of it was important. And I think one thing I appreciate of my parents is that they really did not back down sometimes. And I think the thing that I would tell myself is that, like, this might seem really annoying and unnecessary now, but long term you'll realize that some of these guidelines and maybe having slightly stricter parents were really good, because I think it helped me grow up into a good, like, wholesome adult. And I think, like, some people whose parents, like, really just never had any rules for them as kids, like, I can think of friends and, like, other people, like, family who may not have as strong of rules as I did as an adult, as a kid, and that may have been annoying then, but I think long-term, like, it shows when you're a little bit older. So I'm not saying, like, being extremely strict is important, and like I don't think people should be certain so strict, because I think the harder you come down on your kids, like, the more that they'll rebel. But I do think showing a strong line that you are the parent, I think that is very important for kids and teenagers.
Thank you so much for coming on. Do you have any social medias you want to plug, pasta brands you want to recommend? Any final words? What's your favorite TikTok dance? Who's your favorite member of the Hype House?
Oh, God. That's a hard one. I don't know. Who do I like in the... I think that those twins right now are really funny. I don't know their names.
The Wright twins?
Yeah. I think that they've been really stepping up their game lately. I was actually following them from the start.
Wow.
I don't have a TikTok, but, like, I was really on team, like, the Wright twins. Like, I just wanted them to succeed, and then they got to the Hype House, and then they got verified, and I was like, yes, you did it. You just started out as, like, two kids dancing in your backyard. Like, you're the American dream. Not really, but, like, as far as pasta brands, Jovial Brown Rice Thin Noodle Pasta is all I have to say. Delicious, full of nutrition, better than just, like, white pasta. All sugar, you know? You don't want that in your growing teen bodies.
Okay, well, that's what you recommend. What I recommend is the Barilla Whole Wheat penne or mini penne or the regular barilla penne. That's my pasta recommendation.
Barilla, like if you're feeling slightly less healthy, like Barilla is just like plain gluten. Well, obviously I'm gluten free, but like
right, yeah, you have celiac, so
yeah, like they're gluten free, just like thin.
Guys, I was with Felicia when she found out she has celiac.
Fun fact: I found out at Fall Wars Freshman Keynote
2018.
Literally Friday morning, it was Chakri. Get a call from my doctor, and I'm like, I gotta take this. And they told me I had celiac disease at a convention.
I remember that.
But I was pretty sure. Like, I signed up for gluten-free meals because I was pretty positive.
Yeah, wait, do you eat banza?
I don't love banza, to be honest. And I wanted to, but I don't love it. I like jovial pasta better.
Okay, my only problem with banza is it's a bit gritty and it, like, falls apart if you stir it too aggressively. And I love stirring things.
Yeah, I don't really love banza. I tried it for a little bit. I didn't, like, hate it, but I like the banza. Okay, this is going to sound a little... I actually like their, like, thicker pasta in, like, a baked ziti because it stays together more than the other, like, gluten-free pastas because it's, like, kind of harder. But that's the... I don't love baked ziti, and I don't, like, love... big pasta, but like I do actually like their penne, or like I guess it's probably penne. Yeah,
it's great to live in a world with so many pasta options. I feel grateful.
It really is. How lucky are we?
We are. Thank you for listening. I'm Maya Gamer. This has been Everything My Parents Ever Did Wrong. Please follow me on social media, TikTok especially at The Real Maya Gamer. New episodes come out every week in the middle of the week. Sometimes Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays, never Mondays. Tune in next week to hear more guests and stay safe. Bye.